Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is David Auji, and of course, this is The Big Picture. So, how's it and all? Good? Alhamdulillah. As for me, I am very, very sad. The guests that we had in our home for the past few weeks will soon be leaving us. Yes, glorious Ramadan, a time of great piety and spirituality, of deep reflection and contemplation. Yes, we will miss all of this. The whole atmosphere, the ibadah, the iftar, the bright smiles at sari time, and maybe even the uncle standing next to you at Tarawih time, letting off steaming, nostril-tearing halim and samosa burps. Yes, you will miss him too. Yes, as I said, I feel very sad, and yet at the same time, I feel inspired. Yes, that's right. It puts me in something of a poetic mood. So here we go. And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear. Eid is going to be on Wednesday. I'm almost certain. Sure, I better stop there before the radio police motors throw some hot verbal clubs my way. Well, let me get back to the subject. Yes, Ramadan. More than 1.5 billion Muslims all around the world are gripped by this amazing atmosphere. The rites and rituals of this holy month. Yes, that's right. Gripped by this amazing holy atmosphere. But there are some who are gripped by something else completely that is certainly not holy. So listen to this. This is from the Middle East Monitor. New technology is dramatically changing the way in which Muslims in the Middle East pass their time in Ramadan. Social media is altering people's pattern of behavior during the holy month of fasting, which is normally seen as a period of self-reflection, discipline, and abstinence. The browsing habits of people in the Middle East indicates that 58 million more hours are spent on social media during the holy month, watching videos on beauty tips, to recipes, sports, and TV series on Facebook and YouTube. For Facebook, which also owns Instagram, and Google, which owns YouTube, the change in habit brings new opportunities to boost business in the region. Analysts and experts say that there is a real push for business in the region to capitalize on the surge in viewing time over this period. The daily pattern of Ramadan is cited as an explanation for the increase. People generally stay up longer at night and have more free time, especially before iftar, the evening meal. Muslims also wake up for the morning breakfast known as suhoor before beginning their fast. This translates to 5% more time spent on Facebook's platforms, or what is nearly 58 million more hours, according to Ramesh Shahadi, Facebook's Managing Director for Middle East and North Africa. It's not just Facebook that benefits. Ramadan is also the peak season for advertising in the region, as TV dramas and soap operas are said to experience a 151% increase in viewership on YouTube, according to Google. This, of course, means more profit for new media. Shahadi said, our revenue is a function of people's engagement. The more that they engaged on our platforms, the more that advertisers want to be able to reach those that are engaging. That's what drives our revenue. In Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and UAE, views of sports videos jumped 22%, travel videos by 30%, and action game simulation and video games by 10 to 20% during the holy month. But anyway, there is a silver lining to this. People also spend 27% more time watching religious content on YouTube. Well, dear listeners, what do you make of that, eh? I got nothing to say. But there's something else I've noticed in this Ramadan. There are many bridge-building initiatives between Muslims and non-Muslims. Gatherings in many parts of the world where Muslims are learning about Islam and that Muslims are not what they are made out to be. A new understanding that we are peacefully going about our lives, having the same worries and concerns about the daily challenges as anybody else. And that praying five times a day or wearing a kurta or hijab doesn't mean that you are hiding an AK-47 under it, waiting for an opportunity to commit jihad. It's all about demystifying Islam and Muslims. And many non-Muslims have been fasting to experience what it's all about and have been inspired by it. So yes, yes, wonderful stories are coming out, alhamdulillah. But of course, at the same time, the anti-Muslim brigade is not sleeping. The hatred is still at a huge level. Now, here is a question. When is right wrong? Did you get that? When is right wrong? No, Rosa didn't get me today. Well, here's the answer. Much of the world is moving to the right. By right, I mean a right wing, nationalistic, ultra-conservative, in the direction of racism, bigotry, intolerance, and discrimination and so on. In Europe, the loud voices are saying that Europe is for Europeans and that European culture is being destroyed by people from outside. Immigrants. Immigrants are being targeted, but Muslims in particular. Hence, the banning of niqabs, minarets, the azan, and things to do with Islam. But let me pause and repeat what I said before. Is English and Afrikaans the language of the indigenous African people who lived here in South Africa for centuries? Of course not. You, Europeans, you came from England and Holland with your guns and you took over the place and pushed your language and culture down the throats of the indigenous people. Next door in Mozambique, they speak Portuguese. How come? Go further north and you will pass through countries speaking French. Why? Because you came from Europe and took over Africa and changed everything. And now, you are saying, because Africa is coming to you in Europe and changing things, you are upset about this. Yes, yes. The sheer hypocrisy of it all. Or should I say, stupidity of it all. And speaking about stupidity, here's something that really made me laugh, but at the same time indicated the level of poisoning of people's brains against Muslims. Remember when you were in primary school, you just entered school and you were taught to count 1, 2, 3, 4 and so on. We were told that these are known as Arabic numerals. Do you remember that? Arabic numerals. Well, in America, there is a rejection of anything regarding Islam by the hate groups. And so you find that many states have passed laws banning Sharia law, for example. That's so stupid because no one is trying to introduce Sharia law into America or into these states. But it's all about poisoning people's brains against Muslims. And so back to Arabic numerals. Listen to this. A survey by Civic Science, an American market research company, asked 3,624 respondents, should schools in America teach Arabic numerals as part of their curriculum? The poll did not explain what the term Arabic numerals meant. John Dick, chief executive of Civic Science, said, the results were the saddest and funniest a testament to American bigotry we've ever seen in our data. 72%. Let me just say here. What was the result? What was the result of the survey about whether Arabic numerals should be introduced in schools? The results, are you waiting for it? Of the 3,624 people interviewed, 2,020 answered no. 2020 mamparas didn't know that the numbers they were using every day are known as Arabic numerals. Can you believe it? All they heard was the word Arabic, and immediately the shutters came down in their silly heads. No way, Jose! We ain't gonna let those jihadi Muslims teachings get into our schools and damaging the brains of our kids. No, sirree, it ain't gonna happen. I'm gonna get my gun and stand at the school entrance to make sure no one allows those dirty, stinking Arabic numbers to enter any American classroom. USA, USA. So, do you understand, dear listeners, what I mean when I say that people's minds are poisoned? And ever since Donald Trump, or should I address him by a respectable title, President Pagla came into office, the anti-Muslim hate has gone into overdrive. Yeah. And as I said, most of the world has moved to the right. Recent European Union elections showed that most of the right-wing parties have made huge gains. For example, in France, Marie Le Pen, her party got massively increased support. Here's a sample of her thoughts. In a speech in Paris, she said, "A multicultural society is a multi-conflict society. I want every French person, no matter where they are in France, to maintain their liberty and their rights that Islamic fundamentalists want to destroy them. Multiculturalism is the soft weapon of Islamic fundamentalists, which is allowed by useful idiots under the guise of tolerance." Yeah. So if you tolerate Muslims, you are regarded as a useful idiot. Sure. Did you hear that? Keep an eye on Muslims. They are a danger to our society. And what happened in the last week's European elections in France? Well, Marie Le Pen's extreme right-wing party, known as the National Rally, won 23.5% of the votes compared to President Emmanuel Macron's party, which got 22.5%. And extreme right-wing parties came first in France, in Italy, and the UK. And it's not only happening in Europe, it's happening in South America. For example, in Latin America's largest country, Brazil, extreme right-winger Jair Bolsonaro, he won 46% of the 49 million votes to become president. And so, on the other side of the world, India, Modi has just won a landslide victory. Hindu nationalists just love him. And after the recent elections in Israel, Netanyahu couldn't get the smaller right-wing parties that he had previously to form a government. He couldn't make up a government now after the elections. So that meant he has to call for elections all over again. So now, after this election that are coming up, he will be then joining forces and perhaps going even more radically right wing. Now let's go back to Mr. Orange Hair, our friend President Pagla. What's the story with Donald Trump and Huawei soup? What's the story with Donald Trump and Huawei soup? Does anyone know? Let me say it more clearly. Huawei is in the soup. Yes, yes, I'm speaking about the cell phone giant Huawei. Donald Trump is at war with China, and his latest target is Huawei. He claims that the company is very close to the Chinese government, and therefore the phone could be used to spy on Americans who use it, and therefore he has banned the phone from being sold in the United States. But he went even further. American companies are not allowed to sell anything that Huawei uses in its cell phone, any products produced in America. And of course, we know, so there's no more Google, which will be included in the Huawei cell phone, the new ones, which is, Google, of course, is an American company. And the biggest blow is the operating system known as Android. Also, America will not allow it to be used. Sorry, let me just have a sip of water quickly. I'm just joking. America won't allow it to be used in Huawei phones after a short while. So that, dear listeners, is a way of crippling Huawei sales, not just in America, but around the world. Huawei is a giant in the cell phone market, as you know, but is about to get even bigger. And that's the reason Trump has to stop it. How come it's going to be even bigger? Well, I got the answer from Trevor Noah, the South African who has made it big in the United States on the TV program The Daily Show. Well, obviously I can't play the clip, but here is what he said. So listen very carefully. Trevor Noah explains what 5G is and why the United States and China are in a race to further develop and control this technology. The 5G technology will reportedly be up to 20 times faster than the current 4G standard. To put things in perspective, downloading a 2-hour-long movie takes 26 hours on a 3G network and 6 minutes on a 4G network, while it will only take 3.6 seconds on a 5G network. China and the United States are locked in a power struggle over who will master the technology first and make it available for public usage. According to The Daily Show, when the U.S. won the 4G race, it provided a boost of nearly $100 billion to the gross domestic product of the United States. If the United States also wins the race over 5G, it will create nearly 3 million jobs in the country, apart from providing a $500 billion boost to its gross domestic product. Having access to 5G technology also means dictating what people do over the internet, which Trevor Noah says is everything. Currently, the biggest player in 5G technology is the Chinese tech giant Huawei. On May 15, the United States President Donald Trump signed an order banning American telecom firms from using equipment manufactured by foreign companies, effectively banning Huawei. The reason cited was a threat to national security. Hey. Right. Welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture. We had a slight break there, I think. So anyway, I was telling you about Huawei. And of course, the winner in this 5G race can capture a multi-billion dollar market. So Trump has to block Huawei. But that may be a temporary inconvenience for the Chinese. They are very advanced in the field of technology and they are already working hard on developing their own cell phone operating system to replace Android. Well, good luck to them, I say. And still on the shenanigans of the big bully, Mr. Trump, we have been hearing about the plan he has for the Palestinians, the so-called peace plan, or as he likes to call it, the deal of the century. You know, the man is a first-class joke. And a joke I heard about him on social media. Donald Trump has called for the death penalty for suicide bombers. You got it right? Don't worry, ask your fro to explain it to you. So, what's this deal of the century? Well, Pagla is on about... let me first rewind a little to 1993, to the first deal of the century, the so-called peace deal between the Palestinians and Yasser Arafat. I spoke about this many times. It was signed on the lawns of the White House between Yasser Arafat and the Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, and endorsed by the close friend of Monica Lewinsky, and that is Bill Clinton. Great stuff. Arafat was told, stop your armed resistance, come back to Palestine, and you will have your own Palestinian state. Very likely on the West Bank and Gaza, making up roughly 22% of the land that was originally Palestine. But let me just stop here for a minute. I want to say this very clearly, whether you like it or not, straight to your faces. You know, I'm completely fed up with some of you. Yeah, I'm fed up. Why? Because every week as I'm speaking, the thought comes into my mind, I wonder if they know what I'm speaking about, or more especially about the places I'm talking about. Let me demonstrate this. Put your hands up, all those who know where the Gaza Strip is and where is the West Bank and where is Jerusalem located on a map. Put your hands up. Raise it high, please. I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5! That is so disgraceful. How can you make sense of what I am saying if you don't know where they are, where these places are, and where is Israel? I don't know what you are imagining as I discuss the issue of Palestine-Israel conflict. It can't really make sense to you. So as I said, I'm fed up, wasting my time if you cannot relate to what I'm saying. So, listen here. It's very, very important that you should know where these places are on a map. So I want you to promise me that today, yes, today you will go onto your computer and Google Israel or Palestine. It will just take you 1 minute, and then you must study the map for about 5 minutes and see where is Lebanon is located, and where is Jordan and Saudi Arabia and Syria and Iraq and Iran. Just 5 minutes, right? Do you promise to do that? Say yes, please, all together. I can't hear you. Louder. Right. Now you've made a promise with your rosa mouth, so you have to do it. It's a commitment, okay? Okay, after that scolding session, let's look at the peace deal. As I said, the 1993 deal was also known as the Land for Peace deal. Land for Peace deal. In other words, you will get your land to have your own Palestinian state, and in return, there will be no more fighting. Wonderful, right? Wonderful. But as you know, what happened is that Israel gobbled up up to 60% of that land that was going to go to the Palestinians. But still, the Palestinians stuck with the idea that they would get the land. 26 years they have been sticking to this idea. And now, the latest offer to the Palestinians made by some son-in-law, Jared Kushner, that's his chief advisor on the whole Middle East, Jared Kushner. You Palestinians in Gaza and in small bits here in the pieces of the West Bank where you are living are suffering very badly, terribly. So what we'll do is this. We'll give you lots and lots of money to improve your situation. Billions of dollars we will invest. Of course, the Arab regimes, those sheikhs and sultans and kings, will cough up the billions because they... Of course, they do what we tell them, otherwise they will face the same fate as Saddam Hussein. We are, of course, their bodyguards. So, yes, the billions will be invested in your industries and schools and roads and everything else, so your lives will improve dramatically, you see? But if you refuse the money, then your children and grandchildren will curse you for refusing the deal to improve your lives. Ah, yes. One more thing, eh? One more thing. We give you the money, so be grateful for now and don't talk about land, okay? Not a word. Otherwise, no money. Imagine if the Nats, apartheid time, saying to the ANC, okay, here's the deal. You got Bophuthatswana, Transkei and Venda. We'll pour money there and everyone's lives will improve, but forget all about this liberation and getting more land and all of that. Actually, it's even worse for the Palestinians. They don't even have something that they can call Transkei or Venda or something. Not even a small piece of land that they can completely control. So that's the so-called deal of the century. A dirty, rotten trick, a stupid attempt to blackmail the Palestinians. And this plan is not Donald Trump's plan, nor is it Jared Kushner's plan. It's not an American plan. Any plan is made in Tel Aviv by the Israelis themselves, and America is asked to announce it as if it came from them, from the Americans. It's all a big game, Pai or Beno. And another big game is this tension between America and Iran. That's another big game. Tension between America. America says that Iran is a threat to the whole world and needs to be sorted out. Everyone is talking about war. Will it happen? Won't it happen? Some oil tankers were damaged in the waters in that region, and John Bolton, Trump's advisor, said it was almost certainly Iran. Wow, that's great evidence, isn't it? Almost certainly Iran. Raising the temperature for war. And the Houthis in Yemen, they flew a drone that damaged a Saudi oil pipeline. And again, it is said that it must be Iran because according to Bolton, they support the Houthis. But hang on, not a word from him about the Saudis bombing Yemen to smithereens and putting in place a blockade that has hundreds of thousands starving to death. Now, here's something I came across social media. When you are loading a $70,000 missile onto a $28 million drone so it can fly at the cost of $3,624 per hour to kill some people in Yemen who live on less than $1 per day. Isn't that amazing? Let me repeat that. When you're loading a $70,000 missile onto a $28 million drone so it can fly at the cost of $3,624 per hour to kill some people in Yemen who live on less than $1 per day. So the U.S. is raising the tensions. People are speaking about a war. Iran, of course, doesn't want a war, it says, because, well, you know, in reality, the U.S. can smash Iran. That's right. Can very easily smash Iran. But the war talk at the White House and America and the American media continues. Iran is an increasing danger. Iran is an increasing danger. So Donald says, right, because of the huge tensions, we need to strengthen our allies in the region. Hello, Mohammed bin Salman, listen here. You are in danger from Iran, so you have to buy more weapons from us. Send us a check. We are delivering $8 billion worth of weapons to you. So Salman Bhai obliges and he says, okay, boss, I'll transfer the money immediately. And that's what happened. When I say that's what happened, that sale was announced just about a week ago. But Donald Trump can't sell weapons without the U.S. Congress approving it. But wait, there is a law, a loophole, which says that if American allies are in danger, then there's no need for any president to get congressional approval. Very neat, isn't it? It's all a game, Habibi, all a game. I'm sick of it. Very quickly, let's look at the local scene. You know, I keep telling you that I voted for the EFF. Yeah, that was about 8 years ago. Not in the last year, but the election before that. Because I thought, hey, they will really shake things up, especially getting Jacob Zupta out. They will fight corruption, I thought. Well, all I can say is, how things have changed, eh? Cyril Ramaphosa announced his cabinet, and Malema said, this is a declaration of war. And then the EFF brought out its broken record that is stuck in just one place. Praveen Gordhan, Praveen Gordhan, Praveen Gordhan, Praveen Gordhan. And just before the cabinet announcement, Julius said that the public protector, oh, that's another beauty boy, announced that Praveen was guilty of mismanagement and therefore should not be given a cabinet post. But Praveen had already lodged a complaint asking the courts to review the public protector's findings. Right? So therefore, the whole thing is on hold till the review is determined. Anyway, bottom line is that many hearings found that Praveen did not contravene the law. Did not contravene the law. When he signed off Ivan Pillay's pension payment and early retirement and then hiring him on a contract basis. You know, I read the review document. Pravin asked many legal experts inside and outside SARS to give their views on the matter of Pillai's retirement request. All of them advised Pravin that it was perfectly legal to do so. Anyway, the EFF was asked by the... Now, this is the latest news. The EFF itself was asked by the High Court 2 days ago to apologize to Trevor Manuel for insulting him and also pay R500,000 in damages. And the EFF replied, no, we won't do so because we lodged an appeal against the judgment, so the matter is on hold, still has to be decided. Well, Pravin also appealed the findings of the public protector, so he is innocent until found guilty, and therefore there is nothing stopping Cyril from giving Pravin a cabinet post. Can you see how it works? It works both ways. What's good for the goose and so on. But no. The stuck record continues. Pravin is corrupt. Pravin is corrupt. You know, and just listen to the latest report that has come out on Monday. Listen to this. And this was in the Citizen newspaper. Politics of the bizarre swirled yesterday following the release of a report on how the economic freedom fighters had apparently benefited from the looting of the now defunct VBS Mutual Bank. Let me just jump to the relevant parts. And this was investigated by Polly van Wyk of the Scorpio Investigative, she's a journalist at the Scorpio Institute. And van Wyk noted, money robbed from VBS Mutual Bank Fund funded the EFF's fourth birthday bash held at a popular party revenue in Umlazi, Durban, in July 2017. This forms part of a chunk of the illegal 16.1 million Brian Chibambu's company Smeka projects received from VBS that was ultimately channeled to the EFF. So far, Scorpio has isolated about 4.13 million in VBS loot paid towards the EFF, South Africa's second biggest opposition party. The article is currently on the Daily Maverick with apparent copies of bank statements which on the face of it explain the flow of cash in a scheme designed to mask the origin and ultimate beneficiaries of the funds. VBS money flowed through companies over which Julius Malema and Floyd Chibambu have ultimate control. So this article appeared in the Citizen newspaper. So there you are, folks. Pravin, by all accounts, is innocent of corruption. But Julius and his chomies look like they have to answer some very serious charges where it seems to that there is concrete proof of corruption. It's going to be very interesting times in our new parliament. Right, coming to the end of the program. And let's see what I got. Any light at the end of the tunnel? Let me see. I'm looking now in the light at the end of the tunnel. Graveyard to dig up some recycled ones. Right, so in Sparks Road, well, Sparks Road got lots of barbershop, as you know, Sparks Road, that whole area, Brickfield Road. All of them are competing for customers. Some of them give you fringe benefits. You got that, eh? Don't worry, your fro will explain it to you. Some of them give you fringe benefits like a nice head and shoulder massage. Anyway, business is tight. Competition is very tight. So one barber put up a sign. Haircut, only R5. Put up a big sign. Only R5. Haircut. Well, the clever guy next door, the barbershop next door, put a bigger sign up. We fix R5 haircuts. I think I told you that one recently, didn't I? Hope you forgot. And I hope you laughed also. Right, here's a last one. Ronnie from Mirbank was standing in his front yard when a van came up. It had a sign on it, Sunshine Solar Heating. And a very official looking man came up and said to him, Sir, we have come here to remove your solar heating system because you didn't pay your installment almost for 6 months. Well, Ronnie was very cross and he answered, Hey, what do you mean installments? That's not what the salesman said. The man asked him, What do you mean, sir? And Ronnie answered, the salesman told me that if I put the solar heating, then it will pay for itself in 14 months. So why are you saying I didn't pay installments, eh? Right. Let's see what else I got. Well, Ronnie was also in his backyard and he happened to look over his fence. And he saw the neighbor's 8-year-old son, Raj, digging a hole. He was curious. So he said, hello, Raj. What are you doing? And Raj replied, Uncle Ronnie, my goldfish died and I am going to bury him. And Ronnie said, hey, but Raj, hell, why are you digging such a big hole for a goldfish? And Raj replied, that is because he's inside your cat. Well, there you are, at the end of the big picture. And all I have to say to all of you is, Eid Mubarak! Ladies, I hope your biryani comes out perfectly, inshallah. And you, Balis, I hope your afternoon dose is undisturbed and the masoor doesn't trouble you, inshallah. This is the end of the big picture, and all that remains is from me, A.B. Dawji. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.